The Breakfast Club.
Adam White does it every day. Gets out there and he pounds the pavement like a madman, they tell me. Good morning, Whitey.
I am. I'm really doing quite well at the moment.
Are you?
I'm on this sort of, not a program, but an aim to continually do more steps every month, get a graph thing going.
Have you got a spreadsheet?
Okay. Oh, you're using the phone sheet, yep.
So I'm doing quite well this month. But the thing is, it really annoys me, right?
Right.
Last week, I averaged 12,500 steps for the week.
Right.
That's a good number. Do you think I'm losing weight? Nah, I wouldn't have thought so. Bit of a waste of time, isn't it?
Well, not really. Not really, because if you weren't doing them...
Well, that's true.
And there's an intensity element, too, that we need to throw into all this.
I'm just throwing out
the elements. The reply, of course, there is the income versus the expenditure. It's the age-old accountant's ledger situation.
Yeah.
I was listening to a... what was I listening to? Anyway, something. I don't know where it was. I was listening to something the other week, talking about all these things about metabolism and all, as you get older and all sort of stuff. And the bloke, some professor he was. In the end, you know what it is? You can have all these metabolism conversations you like about being older and slowing down, all sort of stuff. In the end, it's what you put in as opposed to what you put out. That's the cut and thrust of it. You know, as many diets as you like and metabolism conversations, in the end, if you're putting into your mouth more than you're expending, then you're not going anywhere.
My metabolism went to sleep about 15 years ago. Hasn't woken up.
Well, we need to wake it up. Get fired up.
It is a bit deflating, though, when you're doing all this work. Work's probably a bit strong, but we're doing all this activity. And there's nothing to show for
What's your average? 12,500?
Last week, yeah. That's good numbers. Yeah.
Well, we can get it up from there.
You reckon?
That's a dog walk for me. That's dog walk. We'll step that up.
Yeah, but you got to have time.
Well, otherwise we need some high-intensity interval training.
Mm.
The HIIT activity that the crazy kids
get into. I'm
not
doing that stuff.
Well, then we've got a challenge.
Anyway, where were you yesterday, Daniel? Because apparently something happened.
Well, my word, it happened. It was an earthquake.
I'm not so convinced.
What do you mean? Where were you?
Well, I was driving.
Oh, you're in the car. No, you're in the car, so you missed it. Anyone who was outside or was in the car missed it.
I was actually talking on the phone to Andrew Mays from RSN. And he's talking, and he goes, oh, gee, I reckon we just had an earthquake. And I'm like, yeah, whatever you reckon, mate. No dramas. We did.
My word, we did. 5.9, the biggest one since 66 in Victoria, in Melbourne town, and went all the way. In fact, five states or territories were impacted by this. New South Wales, Canberra, South Australia, Tasmania, and Melbourne. So it was a big one, 5.9. And while I was underneath, I was in the worst possible situation.
Were you fearing for your life?
I feared for my life.
Genuinely?
I was in the basement of this building.
Right.
Sitting on my, leaning up against my car.
And this building is not a new building.
It's not a new building. I was leaning up against my car talking to the one and only Frankie Dettori, Joe Pignataro, little Italian jockey friend out the back, who we were just chatting as we were farewelling each other for the day. And all of a sudden my car started shaking. And I'm like, what's going on here? And then there's all the noise, all the rattles, all the stuff underneath the bloody building and fences and pipes and all sort of stuff. They get really noisy. What the bloody hell? Joey actually said, oh, somebody might have run into the building. He thought there might have been a big truck just crash into the front of the building and there might have just been some activity on the back of that. So it was significant. And then the ground started to go a bit and Joey said, oh, the wall's moving a bit. But... so it was the worst possible spot because all I could think of, as we sort of joked the fact there might have been an earthquake at the time, was that if you're in the basement, like everything crumbles on top of you.
Mm.
Like, they're not getting to me for a long time. When it all crumbles, Joey and I are missing for a long time.
Why don't you try and run and get out then?
Well, because it took us a while to work out it might have been something that it might have been because it was an unusual experience. It was a very unusual experience. So we were going to be at the bottom of the rubble for months and months and months, I reckon. Would have been a very upsetting picture for a lot of people out there. Maybe a happy picture too for a lot of people out there. But Joey and I, we would have been dead. We were feared for our lives we did down there.
Well, if you did, it would have been your fault for not getting out from under the building.
Nah, by the time we would have got to the gate, to the opening, it would have been squashed anyway. It would have been squashed.
But you've got great acceleration.
Well, yeah, that is true. I'm a very powerful athlete. I was concerned about my little man though. I had to take him with me. He would have... Although
he would have been able to hide in the crack.
Although he was going for a run, so he was ready to roll. We had to explode out of the gates.
So I've got two questions.
It was very, very intense for a little while. And then my wife rang me and said, did you experience that? So she was very excited about the whole thing.
Mm. Well, I missed the whole thing.
And you're in your car and you missed it.
Yeah. So I've got two questions.
Yes.
My first question is, where did Matt Stewart go? Let's have a listen to this yesterday. This is when we were live on air.
This is the best.
For Racing Pulse.
I guess I understand why it is the case, but it's certainly not an ideal situation. Interested to see what listeners... Gee, we just had an earth tremor.
Oh, wow. I'm feeling it here. We're in Beaumaris. Are we having an earthquake?
We are having an earthquake. This building is absolutely shaking. Jesus.
We're having a... This is a really big earthquake.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you go.
All right. Our house is absolutely... We're in Beaumaris, and the house is going absolutely nuts. Listeners, SMS is 0416 90 50 52. The office where Matt is in the middle of Carlton. This has been a really strong tremor. I would say this is the strongest earthquake I've ever felt.
Well, he was spot on, Blue Eyes. He's got a great feel for these things. He's got a great feel all of a sudden without...
He was in Beaumaris.
He was in Beaumaris, which he actually wasn't. He doesn't live in Beaumaris anymore. He's renting in Brighton. Like, yeah, he doesn't even know where he lives, our man Blue Eyes, but he's got a great feel for the Richter scale.
He does.
He knew it was the biggest.
He's like Adam Scott when he goes for his putsy, you know, he just stands on the ground and gets a good feel for things.
But you're right about Matty Stewart.
Where did he go? That's my question.
What about the fact, like...
He was off.
We talk about being there in the moment and dealing with it, handling the pressure of a situation and being a leader for your crew, being someone that they can rely on. The walls start to shake and Matty Stewart out.
Yep.
He's every man for himself.
Right.
I'm out.
I'll let you go.
Mate, in the end, he went straight to the lift, I think. Somebody was telling me that he went straight to the lift, which is not a place I want to go in.
No, well, there was others that sort of went down the fire escape as well.
Well, I think I'd prefer to be there than the lift than an earthquake.
So the other question I have for you...
They'd all squashed us. Joey and I would still be squashed to the bottom, sort of Stuart Diver style has been picked up off the SMS. Stuart got found, though, but that would have been positive for us, Frank. Would have been very positive.
So this is true. In this Frank's, Michael Felgate's feel for things, it was the most significant earthquake we've had, factoring in Richter scale type numbers, since 1968, where there was a 6.5 in Wickering in WA. So that, we always remember the Newcastle one back in 1989 as being quite significant because there was quite a lot of damage. That was only 5.6.
I don't remember that.
So the question I've got is, you don't remember that?
No.
Actually, there was a 6.7 in Tennant Creek in 1998.
Biggest one in Melbourne since 66.
All right, exactly. So
it's a great feel for things, Blue Eyes.
What?
Even though he's in the wrong suburb.
He should be track walking. What I want to know is, because yesterday what happened was the seismologists really came to life.
Oh, yeah, my word.
And they were right onto it. What have they been doing for the last 25 years where there's been no earthquakes?
Well, there's little trims. There's always little things that happen. They won't let you know. There's 0.7s and there's 1.2s that nobody really cares about. They're very busy, the seismologists.
Well, they were busy yesterday, but what have they been doing for the last 25 years? It's like, this was their moment.
My word. Well, they're getting ready for this. They're getting ready for these moments.
All of a sudden, their seismology Twitter stuff going off, and I'm thinking, oh, this is terrific. What do they do all there every other day?
Well, the man who missed out on all that was Matty Stewart. He was still busy in the lift, just taking off.
All right, I'll let you go.
Never have I seen a man desert a teammate quicker than Matty Stewart yesterday when the building started to shake. All right, I'll let you go.
It reminded me of that Seinfeld episode where George, there was the fire and George just ran for it, just getting past all the people at the kid's birthday party to get out. You remember that episode?
No, don't remember that one.
Do you watch Seinfeld?
I didn't see every episode. I wasn't as loving as everyone, but I've seen lots of them.
More than The Office.
Much more than The Office. Well, one is more than The Office.
I still can't believe you haven't watched that. You've been in lockdown for 300 and something days and you haven't watched it.
I'm watching The Queen's Gambit at the moment.
Who cares about that? Watch The Office.
It's good. No, Queen's Gambit's good. I like it.
There's a couple of labels in sport, I reckon, Whitey, that you wouldn't mind having alongside you. But when you open up the paper the day after performance and you see the words teenage bowling sensation,
yes.
I reckon that's almost top of the pops. And that's the one that applies to Darcy Brown, who dominated against India the other day for Australia, taking 4 wickets. She joined us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Darcy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, teenage bowling sensation. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
What do you think when you hear those labels that are thrown at you? Because you are a teenage bowling sensation.
I don't really know. I suppose we'll have to wait for other games if I play. But, yeah, you know, could just be luck for one game. But, yeah, we'll wait and see what happens.
I'd be surprised if it was luck, guys. I'd be really surprised if that. So 4 wickets you took in the game against India. It was the opening match of the series, and you really did put them on the back foot with your opening spell, which was great. 2 wickets in your opening spell, which I imagine settled the nerves a fair bit, did it?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I was sort of all right to come on the second over, then you don't open up. But no, it was pretty cool to be able to have this opportunity to open the bowling.
Now it's your second game in the one days for Australia. I mean, your first one's obviously a very special moment. Now, do you feel it's only one more game, but do you feel like you are much more a part of the setup now?
I still feel reasonably new, I guess. Well, because I am, but it was really cool to be out and playing, I suppose, and we'll hopefully get to play a few more games, but we'll just have to wait and see.
It's been a fairly long wait for not only you but for everybody in the team to actually play. So, what's the last 6 months been like for you? What have you done in that time to get you in a position to play as well as you did yesterday?
In SA we've been pretty lucky. We've had maybe one lockdown due to COVID. So, back in SA we've been training almost normal. So, been really lucky in that aspect and basically just, you know, doing some bowling drills and in the gym and doing some fielding and conditioning. So, yeah.
And a lot has been spoken about your ball speed, and we were talking about it on the breakfast show yesterday about how impressive it is, and yourself and Taylor are sort of taking the next gen of Australian cricket by storm at the moment. Have you always bowled fast?
I don't really know. I guess so. Ever since, the Pathways back in SA, Cricket Australia would come around and do like a speed gun, and then like for spinners they'd have like the revolutions on the ball or whatever. But then I used to get nominated to go and do that ever since I was about 14 or 13 or something like that, I think. So I guess they've always believed in me in that sort of aspect.
Do you terrify other girls in the nets and in matches that you've played at the lower levels because you've got that point of difference?
I don't know. I don't think so. I still get whacked a bit back at club and stuff like that because I suppose I've been playing club cricket ever since I was probably 12, so they're all sort of used to it, I guess. But, it's good fun to go out in the park with those girls.
Well, it was good. Must have been good fun yesterday too, bowling to the Indians. You weren't shy of bowling a few short ones, just a little bit of chin music, Darcy, as well. I was watching that with great interest. Is that one of your big weapons?
Yeah, I guess so. It's probably the only change-up I can bowl, really. not too skilled in that sort of aspect, but it was one of the plans. I suppose Indians haven't faced too much chin music, I suppose. So, just trying to get them on the back foot and then,
You've had such a big impact in the WBBL. Stepping up to international level, how big a jump is that? We often talk about different levels of play and, you know, domestic and state and then national and international. How big a jump is the one day scene internationally to the WBBL?
I guess it's a really big jump. You know, India are such a great team and, you know, their hitting is it's a bit different to the WBBL girls, where they would hit, I suppose. I suppose that's coming from a different country, but they hit it pretty hard, I guess. So
And what about from you, from a progression perspective? And who are the people that you looked up to from an Australian cricket perspective? Who are your favourite players? I imagine Elise would have been probably one of them. She's been the biggest name in the game for a decade or so, and is a fast bowling cohort as well. Is she one of the ones?
Yeah, I guess so. But I don't know. I didn't really watch too much cricket when I was younger. I guess I'd always see Lisa's name in the paper and stuff like that. But I didn't really have too many idols, I suppose. I was sort of just in awe of all of them. I used to, go to especially in the strikers matches with the men's, and I used to, it didn't matter who they were. I'm pretty sure I asked for the security guard's autograph, but all about the autograph.
So what got you into cricket, Darcy?
Well, I've got two older brothers and a dad who all play cricket, and I guess the only way I could hang out with, especially my brothers, was, you know, to play cricket, because they weren't going to throw a netball around with me. So, yeah, I guess I'd just play cricket with them in the front yard, because they're a bit older than me. And, yeah, I'd throw a fair few tantrums because they were heaps better than me.
Today, we go into the sanctum of the D's and touch base with one of their all-time greats, 302 games of excellence from Nathan Jones over 15 seasons, and he, many moons ago, was a member of the Inner Sanctum with us here on The Breakfast Club. He's back to round it all out. Jonesy, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We are well, mate. We are well. Now, Breakfast Radio doesn't always work for everyone, but you've got two brand new born children. Chances are you're up anyway. How's the things?
I'll tell you what, it was a stretch. I've only been asking about three times tonight, and or last night, sorry. And, I said to my wife, I forgot that I had the interview this morning, and I was like, 7 o'clock is going to be tight, considering I was up at 1, 3, and 5, I think it was. So. I'm feeling all right, mate. But besides a croaky voice, it's good to be back on. It's been a while.
It has been a while. You've been too famous for us, and that's okay. We get it. It's okay. It's all right. But it is lovely to have a chat to you as you've signalled the end of your AFL career after such a fantastic journey with the footy club. I don't want to go back to the kids, though, for a second. You got home just in time. When you got home and you knew it was going to be happening pretty much straight away when you got here, were you pretty pleased that you got on the plane at that time?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was sort of like... I'd had a temporary flight booked on the Sunday because my wife had a scheduled cesarean for the Monday, but for some reason I just had a bit of an inkling, and I'd spoken to her in the morning, and yeah, sort of I sort of had to make a decision. It was pretty clear, obviously, with how well the boys played on that Friday night, smashing the Cats, and you know, I thought my chances of me playing it were now coming down to someone being injured in the 2 week period between then and the grand final. I wasn't willing to risk that versus missing the birth of the twins. And I sort of had made a decision pretty quickly, and I spoke to a couple of people at home, and they're like, I think you should probably try and change your flight. And lucky I did, because I ended up jumping on the flight on the Saturday afternoon. It got delayed, and I got home about midnight. And, about 5:30 in the morning, Jerry called me and said, we're on today. And I was like, I'm coming in. And I jumped in the car, and off I went. And, it ended up happening, obviously, a day early, and had I not changed my flight and come home on the Saturday, there was only one flight out on the Sunday, which was 1:30, sort of would have missed it altogether. So it was sort of meant to be in the end, and I'm very grateful to have made it back. And as I've said a few times this week, I definitely don't regret the decision. It was, it's a tough one from a footy standpoint, but I always went away to Perth knowing that at some point I'd be at a crossroad and have to make a decision whether that was stay and play if I was lucky enough to get that opportunity, or I'd pull the pin and make sure I got back in time to see the birth of the twins.
So going into that prelim, Nathan, you still had an open mind that you might have been able to play the grand final if you won, but that it was kind of going to be down to an injury situation, or how were you feeling? Because, I mean, there were so many shots of you on the coverage that night, and my wife was, I just feel for him watching, you know, because of the agony and the ecstasy. I mean, it was, take us through it.
It's an interesting one. You know, I think, we went away, I had a discussion early days, obviously, when we knew we were going to Perth with my wife, and obviously got the blessing from her. She's been with me on the journey for 16 years, so she knows what it means to me, particularly with, sort of what I've been through at my time at the footy club and sort of where the club's at now. But we're always, as I said before, knowing that at some point in time I'd make the call. So, you know, I was comfortable to head away and have a crack. I knew I was pretty close, you know, speaking with the coaches and obviously my form leading into that final series, probably the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season, sort of left me right on the cusp of the team. But that coincided with the team absolutely dominating and most, if not all, players playing well every week. And, you know, the spots or chances for me were sort of tightening up. And, I was willing to head away and have a crack and hope that something, an opportunity did come up. In case it did, I was there and ready to go. But, you know, I think that's footy and that's the position I found myself in. And I obviously then had to make a decision between that and my family, and which, I probably it's not perfect timing, but yeah, I probably didn't expect to be away in person and 3 week hub, and you know, obviously my wife to be pregnant with the twins. I was probably when we found out she was pregnant, we were counting down the days, and obviously it looked like the Demons were going to, you know, go pretty deep in the finals. I would have expected for us to be in Melbourne and everything to go pretty smoothly, but yeah, that's just the way it unfolded. And yeah, as I said, I don't have any regrets about it at all. I gave myself the best opportunity, and it is what it is now.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you about that, because I guess you knew going in when you decided to play on this year that it was going to be touch and go, and that I kind of, and I'll say this, it was kind of like if the team went past you, that's actually almost a good thing, because you've kind of helped set up this future. So I'm just interested in your mindset now as you get ready for the dream you always wanted to have, how it actually sits with you.
Yeah, I think I went into the year knowing that it was tight as far as, I guess, opportunities for spots. And, you know, I lost my position, and I think it was about round 7 when Goody decided to, or the coaching group decided to sort of adjust the team and go a bit taller with our forward line. And, you know, the coaching decision and sat pretty comfortably with me, but we had a discussion about sort of where to next. If that sort of drops out, a small forward opportunity is, that I was playing at the time, that high half forward role, what's next? And I went back and played more as a midfielder in the VFL and pushed my case up until, I think it was being a sub against Hawthorn. And unfortunately, it's all about timing, luck, opportunity, just right place, right time, as I said before. And I unfortunately got hurt and did my calf and missed maybe another a month. Mm. And then that sort of left me scrambling for the last 5 weeks of the year to get back, get fit, get in form, and then, you know, as I said, you know, right place, right time, and hope for an opportunity. And unfortunately, that's just the way footy goes. And I think from a personal standpoint, there's absolute disappointment, because I gave myself every chance and played some of the best footy in the last few years. But at the same time, if I look at everything in perspective and, you know, the journey that I've been on, you know, I couldn't feel any more pride and joy for where the club's at. I mean, there's two things that kept me going through those darker times, and that was, one, to see it out and hopefully play in a premiership as some sort of reward. And if it wasn't for that, it was just to make sure the club was in a far better position when I finished up, and that, you know, younger players in particular didn't have the same experiences that I had getting drafted to our footy club, you know, with its history and being so revered back in the 50s and 60s, you know, I just wanted to see the club get back to being somewhat like that. And, you know, I think we're well on our way now, well established in terms of the foundations of, you know, restoring some of the respect that our club deserves. And the boys have an amazing opportunity on the weekend to, you know, write their own history, and it's their time now, and I couldn't be more excited for them.
It's hard to argue with that, Jones. You pretty well said too, just by the way. I wanted to flesh that out a bit with you as well, the satisfaction factor. Clearly there's a pain factor and a disappointment factor, as you mentioned just then, but the satisfaction of the grind and building something. There's not many better feelings, I don't think, in life, let alone sport, but being able to start something and see it come through to a point where you look at it from afar, a step back and go, man, look at this, look what we've done. Whatever it is, it's a house, it's a business, it's a football team, look what we've done, look what we've built. I imagine there's enormous satisfaction, despite the fact that I'm sure there's conflicting emotions this week as well.
Oh, absolutely, and that's the perspective I've been able to find in the last week. Like, if I think about it, as I said, from an individual point of view, yeah, it hurts, but ultimately, you know, when I've gone through this week and moved past, obviously, the excitement of my family situation and then announced my retirement, the amount of messages and love and support that I've received from so many people, and then just expressing their gratitude for, you know, I guess my career and stuff, I'd probably never really realised that. Like, when I was stuck in the moment, it was like I was riding all the bumps that everyone else was riding, and, you know, it was difficult and it was hard, but I think the satisfaction I feel is the impact that I've had on my teammates and our supporters and our footy club as a whole. It's probably, I think over time I'll appreciate that. Maybe not as much as a premiership, maybe more than a premiership, who knows. But I think, as I said, it's been
you know, something that's really humbling for me. And, you know, I'm very grateful that the club's now in that position. And I said that to the playing group when I spoke to them, you know, a week or so ago. You know, just be grateful for the position you're in. You know, you just never know. As I said, you know, from an individual standpoint before, you know, football is all about opportunity, right place, right time. And, you know, for those young guys, I think they couldn't be in a better spot, really. They're at a great club with an amazing history and on the cusp of being able to create their own sort of greatness and their own history. And, you know, other than, you know, from an individual point of view and playing and performing the last couple of years, I've spent heaps of time with those young guys trying to help develop them and, you know, build their resilience and their skill set up to make them better footballers. And, you know, I think I feel some sort of satisfaction just playing a small part in seeing those guys improve and now get their chance.
Nathan Jones, retiring Melbourne champion, is with us on The Breakfast Club in the build-up to the grand final and to celebrate what's been an amazing career for Jonesy over 302 games. Further to that, though, are you surprised at what has been built? I mean, 2018 obviously was a really impressive year in many respects. The finish wasn't very glamorous, but 2018 was a pretty impressive year. But on the back of that was some challenging times. Did you expect this level of bounce from the Ds? I mean, it's been one of the most powerful teams I've seen in decades, the way they've gone about their business this year. Are you surprised or did you see it coming?
Nah, I saw it coming, to be honest. Maybe not to this extent. Like, you know, I can predict that you're going to make a grand final from where we were last year, but in saying that, the club took on, you know, a great responsibility to review our footy department quite intensely. And, you know, I think they made some decisions and some changes. And, you know, I think Goody, for one, would admit, you know, some of the feedback that he would have received, and to his credit, made some significant changes over the off-season. Not so much, you know, doing anything too drastic, but really just simplifying what we had. And, you know, I guess realigning our focuses to, you know, I guess our strengths and being able to perform, you know, week in, week out, and win or loss, you know, not, I guess, how do you say it? You know, not taking the result too personally, but more so looking at, you know, how we're trying to play and how we're trying to execute. And I think from there, you know, we've just built momentum. You know, we spent the whole summer practicing that. It wasn't win or loss. It was more, you know, how we were trying to play and, you know, specific statistics that sort of reflect the game style that we're trying to play. And every week we've just gone after that. And, you know, as the results start to build and the momentum starts to build, you know, sort of snowballs. And not too dissimilar to the feeling in 18 when we got on a bit of a roll. It felt like that, but much earlier in the season this year.
Mm.
And coupled with that is just the genuine growth and maturity of the group over the last, what, 3 or 4 years, and then you get the product that we've got. And obviously a bit of luck has to go our way. As I said before, you know, we've lost 4 games, and I reckon it'd have to be one of the better seasons as far as injuries go. Like, we've had barely anyone get hurt.
Yep.
A couple of serious knee injuries, but yeah, it's been an amazing ride and an opportunity well deserved. There's been so much working behind the scenes, not only from the coaches, but fitness staff and everyone to get the team in this position. Even the players that don't run out as part of the 23 this weekend, it's not only me that's going to be stiff, but there's a whole heap of other guys that could have played in our team multiple games and had an opportunity to play this weekend. Maybe 6 or 7 of them that have played good enough. But I think that's the mark of a strong team and a strong culture. And you know, the boys that do get to run out on the weekend will understand that. And do our club really proud.
Yeah, there's some very good players that aren't going to be playing for Melbourne on Saturday. There's no doubt about that. I'm just interested, Nathan, in the intangible of it all. There seems to be this bit of magic, which is often the case with a good team, but this belief that you've got in yourselves and what Simon Goodwin has put forward from a tactical situation, it's kept you calm, even when you've had that a couple of times where you haven't played as well as perhaps expected. That this belief, where does it come from?
Well, it probably comes from what I was alluding to before about, you know, not so much getting strung up on the result, win or loss, because that's so much of an emotional roller coaster. You live a high, then you live a low, you know what I mean?
Yep.
whereas we've just tried to keep it much more neutral with such a focus on teams, you know, playing and executing your role and doing your job for your mate and, you know, sacrificing for your team, for your club, and then just, you know, the team ethos that we, you know, we own and we created as a group has just become part of who we are. And I think the more you do that over time and the more, you know, that builds momentum, you see that it works and then you believe in that. And then the more challenges and opportunities that you face across the season and you sort of find a way to do things, as you said, maybe not playing your absolute best, but then also playing your absolute best the week after or a few weeks after that, you just start to build this total and utter like resilience in terms of how you play. And I think that's where we're at that point now. You know, we believe our best footy is good enough to beat anyone, and no matter what position we find ourselves in, if we just keep continuing on, you know, the way we want to play, we'll create those opportunities and chances to win games of footy, and that's all we've done.
It's hard to come to terms with the fact that it's finishing for you. I remember all the way back to draft camp for you in Canberra, and half Nathan was the $1.20 favourite to win the beep test because he was a running machine and had the big reputation. And I'm sure you remember this, Nathan, but you vomited before it. You were sick and you weren't going to even you weren't even going to compete. And that was the talk around the gymnasium at the AIS. Oh, he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it. The thought was he was even going to break records. But you did it. And the respect you got that day from all the recruiters was pretty impressive. And they thought, this guy's got fighting qualities. And I just wanted to say congratulations because it was almost emblematic of your career that you fought to the absolute end to get the absolute best out of yourself, even when things were tough. So I think it's a real credit to you that you've lived that from draft camp before you were drafted right to the very end. So I just wanted to say congratulations because I've followed you so closely from that day.
Yeah, thank you, mate. No, I was fair to say I probably wouldn't have scripted my career the way it's gone, but you know, I think I've got to be grateful for the opportunity that I guess was afforded to me as a youngster, and I don't regret any of the decisions I've made. I love our footy club, and you know, as much as my journey didn't include all of the super highs that you envisage when you're a young kid, both individually and collectively as a team, I think the chances and opportunities and lessons that I've learned along the way have shaped me into the person I am today. And as I said, you know, the main thing is the club's in a better position now that I finish up, and I look forward to sitting back and hopefully seeing all this group in particular and all these young guys, you know, take this club to where we all hope it can get to. And firstly with the big dance this weekend, and then hopefully, you know, what we've built and created is everlasting and for a long period of time, because the club doesn't ever want to go back to some of the days we saw, you know, in the last 10, 15 years.
Saturday night at Optus Stadium for the AFL Grand Final, and Josh Dunkley is our man on the ground and ready to tell us more, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Good on you, buddy. Great to have you with us. Now, it's not far away, this Grand Final. Now, you've had an unusual build-up in terms of timeline with that week off. How's it been for you getting through this period?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I mean, you know, our final series has been week after week after week, so we haven't really had a spell for quite a while. So it's actually been probably a little blessing in disguise for us, you know, after a long season to get, you know, a week off and freshen up a little bit. So it's been an interesting build-up, but everyone's nice and fresh at the moment. Really looking forward to Saturday night.
Is there, has it been, I mean, obviously it is a different build-up. You've been through it before. This is the thing you have as an advantage over the D's. Is it anything like last time? It was the first time for a long time, the Bulldogs in 2016. It's 5 years down the track. It's in Perth. Clearly it's a little bit different. Is there anything you've done similarly or you know how to handle a bit better because of what you've experienced?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's probably been on record this week saying it, but I think, you know, 2016 felt like it went really quick. You couldn't really enjoy the build-up. It was that fast and everything happened so quickly. So the couple of week build-up into this one has definitely been some enjoyment out of it, and you can relax a little bit more. But I'll be lying to say that there's not a few sleepless nights, or like you lay in bed at night time and you're still thinking about the granny. So it's been interesting and exciting, and I think the boys are really looking forward to just getting out there.
So I'm interested, Josh. Are you, when you're lying in bed, are you thinking about what you've done previously, having won back in 2016 and all those great memories, or is it all about what you're going to have happen to you on Saturday?
Oh, it's probably more about Saturday, to be honest. Like, I'll forever remember the 2016 final where, you know, when you run out and you hear the crowd and even the grand final parade and the build-up and just the support from the fans that you get. So I'm sure it's going to be no different over here, you know, being out and about over the last couple of days. The Perth community are really, or WA community, really getting around the game. So it's going to be exciting. I think, yeah, more of those, you know, looking forward to the game rather than what we've done in the past. I think it's really important to stay in the moment and obviously be confident with how we've played over the last month or so, and take that into the game.
We spoke to Max Gawn earlier in the week, and we talked about the last time you played, and it was a win to the Bulldogs, and you played really well, and having played quite poorly against Melbourne earlier in the year in another top of the table clash. Do you see how it might play out the game? Do you think it'll be similar to the MCG game? Did you learn a lot from that game? I'm just interested in what you're referencing going into Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm probably a bit of a harder one to tell that because I didn't actually play in both of those games. But upon reviewing them, I was, you know, obviously stating the reviews, being injured and things like that. So, it was, I think you take a lot of confidence out of the second game, especially like Melbourne were able to shut us down in that first one. So it's interesting the way that it's gone this year. You know, we've played them three times when you look back to JLT or the Amy series game as well. So it's been a good showing, and we've come up against them a few times. So we know what to expect from them, and they're a great side. They've been one of the best sides all year. So to be playing against them in a grand final is not surprising. So we've just got to be at our best on grand final day, and hopefully that goes a long way into us, winning.
Are there games in the season, Josh, where when you do review them, you start to think and talk about, well, we might meet this team in a final at the end of the season because they're going okay and we're going okay? Are there those moments in the year and you just make little mental references and mental checkpoints about what happened in games? You talk about you not playing in these particular ones, but does Bevo talk about that through the year, that we might come up against these guys, so just pay attention to this sort of stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I think not in the early parts of the season because you're not too sure how it's going to pan out and you never know what's going to happen. But definitely, I think later in the season, like we played against Port in the last round, and we knew that they were obviously a quality outfit. They were fourth at the time on the ladder, and we might have come up against them again. So we did talk about that and, you know, taking note of, especially after the game, taking note of what they did to us and where we sort of weren't at our best. So there are conversations that are like that, but, not until probably later in the season. So obviously looking back now, we've played Melbourne, as I mentioned, a few times. So you take mental notes from those games and, we do have a little, thing in the opposition meetings where you write down things that you learnt from the opposition at those times.
Now, grand finals, as you well know, are the reason that you play. You want to win a grand final, be a premiership player. You are a premiership player at this point. What's looked likely to happen is that there'll be, there's changes. Keith and Waitman will come in for the Bulldogs, all going well, and there's a couple of changes. Do you look at pay attention to the players that perhaps might be on the edge? Do you see a different body language in this week, knowing that there's going to be a couple of decisions made?
No, not really. We're still unsure about how it's all going to go because the boys have still got to, prove their fitness for training and things like that. But they're actually all on track, so it'll be interesting to see how we go. But I think that's, I've spoken to a few people about it, but that's what makes, the good clubs great. And you've looked back over the last few premiers and you've got, Richmond and the Hawthorns, they've always got unlucky players missing out on grand finals. So it's squads that, that make grand final teams, and I feel like that's what we've got this year. And Melbourne are very similar. So it's exciting that we've got the competition for spots, and, guys are right on the edge there and putting pressure on the guys that are in the team. So it's great to be able to have that. It's probably a bit of a luxury for all of us. But, it's exciting that I think we can have the real buy-in from everyone in the group.
Selection competition always creates a strong team. You know what a strong team looks like. You've been a part of the best one in any season in 2016. What gives you confidence that what you've got is good enough on Saturday with your group?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, you think back to 16 and the side that we had, and we had a lot of senior players running around then, and you know, they hadn't really had the success before. So to have, you know, guys that, well, 5 years ago we were playing in that final. So, you know, the guys that were there then and now playing again in another one, it's 5 years of intelligence and knowledge on the game. And I think, you know, obviously Bonty starts with our skipper. He's obviously leading from the front, and to have that experience in the team is very important. And I feel like, you know, to be in this position that we are, it's exciting, and we can pass on that, you know, what we learnt last time to the younger fellas that are playing in their first grand final. So it's really good to be able to do that. And I think, yeah, it's going to go a long way for us on the weekend.
Another legend on the line. Grant Birchall has decided that it is time for him to hang up the boots after 287 games with the Hawks and the Brisbane Lions. He's an All-Australian in 2012. He's a four-time premiership player, if you don't mind. So this time of year is bread and butter for him with the Hawks and a member of the Tasmanian Football Hall of Fame. He's Devonport's favourite son, he is. He's with us on the line. Good morning, Birch.
Good morning. How are you going?
We're going well, mate. Nice to have you with us. How are you this week in grand final week when it's all over?
Yes, yes. Now, certainly wish I was playing this week, that's for sure. Very envious and jealous of the two sides playing. But, no, it's been okay the last couple of weeks. It's been pretty full on with the retirement and all the messages and phone calls from everyone. And the phone's been going berserk the last couple of weeks, which is good. I'm certainly feeling the love. Yeah, just up here in Queensland, mate, enjoying the sunshine.
Is there an element, I mean, you've achieved so much in such a great career, the last couple of years you've had really good looks at the Brisbane Lions. It could have been anything. Is there an element of frustration at the end, even though you get a chance to reflect on the overall package of 287 and four flags?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. I think we've finished top four the last couple of years, and we gave ourselves a really good opportunity to go deep and to do something pretty special, but it wasn't the case. And that's what happens. It's a tough game. And so I'm sure the boys will come back next year bigger, stronger, more determined than ever to make sure that doesn't happen again. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching them go about their business.
Grant, congratulations on your career. Absolutely outstanding. It was great to play against you and then obviously watch you just fly as a Hawk and a Lion. I was looking back to see how the Lions introduced you as a player coming off what you did at Hawthorn, and they described you as a decorated Hawk, you know, awesome left boot, calm under pressure, four-time premiership player. So if I was a Lions supporter, I'd be pretty excited now, as you could imagine. So I thought, where's the big pump-up coming from now? Then they go on to describe you, Birch, in 2020, all he wants to do is find consistency in his body. Now, all of a sudden, they built you up, and then they deflated you instantly.
Yes. No, I'm coming off 3 years of not much money, and I was just sort of this old guy in the back pocket, just sort of going about his business. So, not great, is it? But it was good. They're a good riffing bunch of lads. I've really enjoyed my time here in Queensland. I'm really grateful for what Brisbane and Fakes have done for me. I guess it would have been a little bit risky bringing up a 31-year-old that hasn't played much footy. And, for them to give me the opportunity and for Fags and the coaches and everyone to believe in me and back me in, I'm certainly grateful for that. So it's been a ripper couple of years.
I must confess, Grant, I thought you'd go around again because your 2 years have been really high-quality footy and dependable. I mean, your body has held up more than it did in your final couple of years at Hawthorn. So how agonising was that decision?
I sort of mentioned, we played West Coast in our last game of home and away season. I sort of quietly mentioned to Fags that I think this would be my last year. I'm just mentally and physically drained. That three-year period out of the game was really, really tough. Just trying to get back and having setback after setback was really tough mentally. And I just felt as though I've come up here, I've done my bit for 2 years. Young Coleman and Jimmy Madden and these guys played quite a few good games across halfback, and I just felt it was time for them to really step up and make halfback their own. As well as I'm going to be a dad for the first time. My partner's expecting a little baby boy at the end of the year, and I just felt it was the right time for me to move on and give those guys an opportunity.
Well, I'll get one because you won't be there. The body conversation is interesting, Birch. because Alistair Clarkson bought you a dog to get your body moving, so you go walking and walk the dog. Do you feel any guilt about handing that dog back straight away a couple of days later?
Not at all. Not at all. It drove me up the wall. Clark, it was certainly, his heart was in the right place, very generous, but no, it didn't last long. I had to hand it back to him pretty quickly, and he's still got it to this day.
He does, he's named it after you as well, so the family love
it. It's a funny little story.
Speaking of a man who'd love a beer, I wonder if he's ever collapsed on a footy field for no good reason. Doug Hawkins, a legend of the Footscray / Western Bulldogs Football Club, spent a season at the Roys as well in 1995. 350 games of awesomeness from Dancing Dougie, Charlie Sutton medalist, leading goal kicker, if you don't mind, captain and VFL team of the year a couple of times as well, and one of the all-time great personalities in the game. Joins us ahead of one of the biggest weeks in his footy club's history. Dougie, good morning.
Whitey, half, and the great Brad Johnson. And Jono, I heard you say that about Birchall helping you out when you're in that position. Dipper did the same thing to me. He knocked me out and then he started to choke me. I said, Dipper, I can't breathe. I said, I can't breathe. He said, I'm trying to kill you. That's what I'm trying to do. Dipper, John, I'm thinking. Back in the early
80s,
mate, he just wanted to
kill me. Now, Dougie, that whilst distressing to a degree, that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, the big fella knocked me out with an accidental elbow, which he would do accidentally. as I was trying to work out where I was, I realised his hands were around me. Fuck, he's trying to joke me as well. Oh,
gee, now, Hawk, seriously, how pumped are you at the moment, Hawk, for this weekend?
Jono, it's just been an amazing journey for the footy club and Jono, and for guys who, you know, we had opportunities and for whatever reasons we weren't quite able to get to what we wanted to get to, that was the big dance, and these boys now, two in 5 years, has been absolutely fantastic. And I think, John, I think it might be seven or eight guys still left, maybe from the 2016 side, which is going to hold them in very, very good stead. They've been on the big dance, they've done it before, and the sort of the pattern's been very similar. And the boys, like, it's been a pretty hard journey for the Western Bulldogs. They've travelled a hell of a lot, and I just think their performance against Port Adelaide was actually breathtaking. It was just awesome. That, you know, 31 scoring drops, I think it was, to about 15, and. Yeah, I think it was about midway through that first quarter. I said to Raylene, turn it over to Home Improvement Show. Is this game going? I just said, turn it over now. She's all over out. She goes, not yet. I said, yes, it is. It's all over. I mean, the crowd were hit by the stun gun. They didn't even move in Port Adelaide crowd at Adelaide Oval. And then you see the players sort of go back in their shells very quickly. And as we know, Jono, Whitey Half, the great late Charlie Sutton, who was our captain coach for 54 Premiership, you know what he said? Shop early, avoid the rush. Did they shop early? Didn't they, Jono? Didn't they shop early?
Oh, they certainly did, Hawk. Your thoughts on Bevo Hawk, and I suppose since 2016 there was a bit of the way the club sort of didn't play finals for a few years, but what are your thoughts on what he's done to get the club back into this top four position and now contending again for another flag?
Yeah, Jono, nothing surprised me with Luke Beveridge. It really doesn't. And as a player, I had a couple of years, Jono, with him in 93, 94 it was. And matter of fact, the day I broke Teddy's record, he started on the bench with me and my great mate, Steve McPherson. And, mate, as a player, he was tough. He was hard. He had a few tricks, wouldn't hold back. And, Jono, his coaching at the moment, it's just been outstanding. It really has. You know, there's been a few little selections that I was a bit wary about early on. But he's the man who's steering the boat. And you know what they're doing too, boys? You know what they're doing? And that's as a coach of any, you know, you could be coaching junior footy, where it may be, Jono and Harp and Whitey. They're actually playing for him. You can see him playing for him, but you can just see that passion for their coach. And I just reckon Jono is coaching beautifully at the moment. And don't worry about it. Coaching is very, very important. When you've got a coach who can coach as the game unfolds, a lot of coaches go on these plans of A, B, C, D, and they stick to that sort of stuff a fair bit. He'll change it as the game plays. So I think he's coaching beautifully, Jono.
You must be wrapped with the number seven still dominating the wing for the Dogs, Hawk.
Lockie Hunter, between me, Lockie and Scotty West, We've won 9 best and fairest. Scotty won seven
of them.
Scotty won one. So, mate, when I say the young bloke now, Jono, he must be probably nearly 26, 27 now. And obviously, we both, I think you would have played with Mark too, I reckon you would have, Jono.
Yep.
You would have played with Kenny Hunter, his dad, Mark. He's a very good player. But well, we call him Kenny Hunter because of the great Kenny Hunter at Carlton. He wasn't far off Kenny Hunter in ability, just quality, boys. Kenny Hunter, Mark had a good play, don't know about him. But going back to Lockie very quickly, Johnny plays a different role to how the wing was played. You know, the wing role's changed now, and he's become that real, I suppose you'd call the link-up man, that man you go to in the back line when they're under pressure, and they just keep seem to find him. He seems to find the footy. I think his kicking's got a bit better. It's got better. He's been fantastic, and he's had a great year, great final series so far again. And I don't know who playing, probably the boy Langdon, who's got that bit of run and a bit of charisma too, a bit of flair. But Hunter's been fantastic, Jono.
Now, Hawk, as you know, I grew up idolising yourself, playing on the wing and dominating. In fact, when I walked into the club for the first time, Hawk, you walked me in, and you actually sat me next to you at locker number 6. You were number 7, of course. I remember sitting down in the locker next to you, and you go, OK, that's enough. Get to the other side of the locker. Which was a great initiation. It made us laugh, Hawk.
I've got a gut feeling, Jono, you took the great Brian Royal's number 33.
I did.
That's what you started with. Yeah, and I just had to make sure that you weren't too comfortable being in the environment. You weren't going to get a low number first up. So you had to do the hard yards, Jono, which I was very lucky in my time. Ray Huppert's left foot spray in the 77, and he'd gone to North Melbourne. The number 7 was sitting there when I was only 17 back in 78. So, but for you to take, you know, the great Brian Royal's jumper was just fantastic for you, Choco, as a young boy, you know, coming out of Hoppers Crossing, and to get that and to fulfil your dream. And then, obviously, when you got that, you know, the number 6, you know, obviously the great Charlie Sutton, the great Georgie Bissett. There's been some great players that have worn that jumper over the years as well. So, I had to just make sure you weren't going to get ahead of yourself. And you know what, Whitey? You know what, Whitey Half? You know what, Whitey Half? He actually did. He went on to play number 364 games.
Yeah, because I was taught the lessons early, not to get comfortable.
I said to Granny one day, it was early days, and Granny just come down more or less after a year or two from Dale. So I think it was after our 92, we got knocked out by Geelong in the prelim final. I said to Granny one day on the training track, I said that young kid Johnson, I reckon he'll play 200 plus.
Well, you're right.
I was 200 short.
Hey, Hawk, what was your best year of footy, Hawk? Looking back at it, as I said, I watched you closely. I loved watching the club back in the day. Was it 85 when you dominated the wing, but you had 531 disposals, only 7 goals? But or was it 92, which I think was your better year, 409 disposals, but you kicked 42 goals that year?
Yeah, Jono, it was a hard one because both years we played in prelim finals. I think personally for me, I felt 85 because of my final series in 85 was pretty good. That's not being a big-headed or boastful. I had a pretty good final series in 85. And, of course, in 85, Brad Hardy won the Brownlow Medal in his first year, coming over himself, Fremantle, and could he play? I mean, he was one of those blokes that just come down the ground from the back pocket, create opportunities to score goals, and he was just a fantastic player. So for me personally, Jono, and of course we had the great Simon Beasley, a full forward who kicked 100 goals as well. We had a terrific side in 85, and that's not saying we didn't have a great side in 92, but boys, it was very similar, Jono, and I'm sure you agree. I thought we were a bit of a chance if we could beat Geelong to get to West Coast. I thought we'd matched up against them well under the coaching of Mickey Mouldhouse at West Coast, and I thought we were a bit of a chance, and it was a bit like that in 85. If we could get over Hawthorn, we would probably give Essendon a real good run, who, by the way, were a fantastic side as well. But, Jono, to answer that question, mate, I probably just... The stats sometimes don't completely add up. I just thought, for my feelings, and particularly was about those 3 finals games, which I had, you know, 3 pretty good games, and... they were probably the standouts for me, mate. Probably 85, John. Yeah.
So, Dougie, obviously the premiership drought happened or was broken in 2016. How do you feel going into this year's grand final? It is different. It's obviously been played in Perth, but the monkey's off the back as well. Can you feel like you can enjoy it a little bit more?
Yeah, I reckon I can, because we're all waiting to break. And this is where Melbourne's in the same situation. I don't know, was it 63 or 64 they haven't won one? Or is it that far back?
Yeah,
or?
Yep.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just... Mate, I think you can sit back now and really, because we're really on the edge, you know. I felt the boys played their grand final when they beat GWS back in 2016 under the coaching of one of our favourite sons in Leon Cameron. And that win was like a grand final, John. It was sort of like, I thought, you know what, that's our grand final. We actually haven't been into one since 1961 and we got beat by Hawthorn. I thought, this group now has played a grand final. How do you get them up again? And Bevo did that. He got him up again against obviously Sydney Swans. So you know, it's a very similar sort of pattern for him. And I just think that they're playing the brand of footy. I don't think Melbourne's played a game for how long, boys? 26, 27 games, 27 days or something. Is that right?
One game.
They play one game in about 26. I don't reckon that's a good thing. Me personally, as a player, I like momentum. I like going in after play the game. And then, of course, we've had this week off. And it's not going to hurt Stephen Martin. And I just think that's going to be the most critical contest of the game. I think our midfields are very, very even. I just give our blokes that bit of a nod. With the Bont and McRae obviously gone to another level. The boy Smith with the long hair, mate. Can he play? I mean, they're going to rough him up, are they? they're going to rough Bailey Smith up. He wouldn't give one continental about that. That has just made me smile when I read about it. I think it was Jordan Lewis said, "Oh, they've got to rough him up. They've got to get in with him." He wouldn't give one continental. So you know. And then of course, Talor's going to be better for the run and Dunkley. But the man they got the two men that I really think are so critical. Obviously, Norton up forward and Tim English will play forward a fair bit. Is of course Thomas Liberatore. Thomas Liberatore for me is you got to be able to stop him. Liber's fantastic. You like his old man Tony. They've just got great courage. They're tough. They're hard, and he's a fantastic player, boys. And Martin, he'll jump into Max Gaunt. Make no mistake, he'll be all over him like a cheap suit. He'll be all over him like a cheap suit, and he needs to be, because Max Gaunt is the man that gets them going. And it won't be an easy little grand final for Maxie, boy, because Martin's going to hunt him. He'll hunt him.
Look at that.
He's going to hunt him, Jono. He's going to hunt him.
Gee, the fight's still there in you, Dougie. The fight.
Passion Hawk, I love it.
Fight's still there in you. Can I take you back to 85 for a sec, Hawk? I mean, you put on a clinic in that semi-final against the Kangas. You had 38-1 in that win over the Kangas in the semi. And that prelim you talked about against Hawthorn, if you felt you got over that, you could have a crack at the Bombers. It was such a tight game. It was 4 points at half time to the Hawks. They led by a point at three quarter time, and they win it by 10. Do you think about that game a lot in terms of what this generation of Dogs have been able to do, get to a grand final and have a chance to play in it? You didn't get a chance. You fell short twice. Do you think about that game?
Yeah, I do. I do a bit, boys. I do a bit. I reflect on it, and I look back to it, and I think that the great coaching of Michael Malthouse. You know, remember the qualifying final, boys? We got beaten by 97 points by Hawthorn. We got absolutely embarrassed at the great MCG. And Mick, do you reckon Mick didn't let us know how insipid, how we rolled over and just copped it up the backside? And it continued, and he even went to the stage, you embarrassed your family, you're embarrassed. He's coaching after that, that absolutely flogging that we got was just... was just magnificent. So he got us up against the Kangaroos, briefly kicks 100. And here we are. We've got to go another week later. In 2 weeks, we had to go play a side who absolutely pulled our pants down by 97 points and go into a prelim final out at Waverley. And as you said, you know, we got beat by only 10 points. I mean, it was a great coaching performance. It was a great effort by the playing group. We just needed to rebound. We finished second that year on the ladder. And if we in saying that, Essendon would just... This is in that grand final. They were awesome, led by Simon Madden and Timmy Watson and blokes like Van Aert, Terry Danaher. The list just goes on and on. The late Merv Nagel on a wing and Shane Hurd. They were just a fantastic side. Mark Harvey, Bomber Thompson, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty slick, that 85 Bomber outfit, no doubt about that. And this 2021
Dog's outfit's pretty slick too. You were up and about talking about it before, Hawk, and you had your fighting face on. I could see it down the line, your fighting face. What's going to happen on Saturday night, do you reckon? What's the margin?
Well, I'm obviously, I just think the betting's not right. I can't see Melbourne $1.60 and we're $2.50. I think it's a very even money bet. Melbourne, again, in good form. They made Geelong look terrible, didn't they? They made Geelong look second rate, Melbourne. They were fantastic. And I just think we got that momentum. 8 or 9 of the boys have been on the big stage before, and I'm going for a doggish victory by about 4 or 5 goals.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.